authorities controlling things, and there's always a question of, well, what are they doing behind the scenes there? Kind of on a related topic, we're going to do a little book review here. Going to talk about a book called The Discovery of Freedom, Man's Struggle Against Authority. It's written by Rose Wilder Lane, who's since deceased. If the name sounds familiar, she's actually the daughter of Laura Ingalls Wilder. Yeah, Little House on the Prairie. And actually, I had seen my mom had Little House on the Prairie on at her house when I was over there some weeks ago when I was reading this. And they had Baby Rose on there, you know, depicted, of course. But sounds like a very interesting person. And I found a lot of value from this book. Very philosophical, goes back in history. And some information I was not familiar with. So here joining us to talk about that book, give us a little more enlightenment on the topic, is Mr. Eric Dixon from St. Louis. He's the editor of the Show Me Institute. Yes, that Show Me Institute, who, if we'll get to, they actually released a new Columbia Police SWAT raid from a couple years ago. They got a sunshine request, but I don't know. We might get to that a little later. But Eric, are you with us there?
Yes. Hi, Steve.
Hey, yeah. Thanks for joining us here. I guess it's you guys snowed in pretty well over in St. Louis as well?
Yeah, I think the roads cleared up pretty well by mid-morning, but I decided to stay home and work from here today. Pretty much everything I needed to do could be just as easily done from home.
Gotcha.
So.
Power technology, telecommuting there.
Yeah.
Well, tell you what, this book that actually you referred to me some time ago talks about kind of, well, like the subtitle, Man's Struggle Against Authority, that kind of her premise that I take is, you know, kind of the default in human history, you know, where people you have a government or what have you, or leaders, that defaults to this kind of authority figure, and people bow down or follow them, and they're subservient. What's your take on her take of authority there?
Well, first, a little background about Rose Wilder Wayne might be useful.
Yes, thank you.
A lot of your listeners might know that her mother, Laura Ingalls Wilder, wrote all the Little House on the Prairie books.
Right.
And that actually Rose Wilder Lane was a big part in developing those books, either through editing or you know, ghostwriting some of the material and helping shape the stories. So Rose Wilder Lane really had a strong background in sort of the hardships of growing up on a farm and the hardships of the Great Depression in particular. And as she grew older, she realized just how important human freedom is in, you know, the role of creating prosperity. She started out as a journalist, and she actually, in her earlier years, considered herself a communist. Though she never joined the Communist Party, she sort of felt inclined in that direction until she was working for the Red Cross as a correspondent in their publicity division, and they sent her to Russia. And what she saw there firsthand about how the nature of a centrally planned economy didn't result in prosperity, and in fact, it resulted in quite the opposite, that she started to reconsider a lot of her views about the nature of society and the nature of freedom. And it was several years after that, 1943, she published The Discovery of Freedom with her view of how freedom helps shape prosperity and the progress of society.
Hmm.
1943 was also a sort of a milestone for you know, libertarian works like this. It was the same year that Ayn Rand published The Fountainhead and Isabel Patterson published The God of the Machine. And those three books together, along with this one, The Discovery of Freedom, kind of were some of the most influential libertarian works.
Three very intellectual women writers there in that movement.
Yeah. And I mean, libertarianism is often seen as sort of a man's game or a man's club, but it's really the case that three of the strongest intellectual leaders of the libertarian movement in the 20th century were these three women: Ayn Rand, Isabel Patterson, and Rose Wilder Lane.
Hmm. But going back to the idea of authority, you know, whether it's a some kind of cult or some religious aspect, whether it's a god king, pharaoh, Führer, Adolf Hitler, seducing the people that they must follow this person. That's some of my takes on this. What's your general take on the book or her theories here?
Well, she sort of approached this topic of power and authority as a journalist. basically looking back through history and trying to see, you know, where in society did people tend to prosper and where in society did they tend to fall into poverty and into ruin. And she hit on this observation that essentially the more free people have been, the greater prosperity they've achieved. And she goes through a few stages in the book where she talks about sort of, you know, she talks about the first real attempt for, you know, human freedom on a wide scale was with the Jews, with Abraham and Moses. And she talks about, you know, being freed from Egypt and that attempt for autonomy. And it wasn't perfect, and it didn't really completely last. She talks about the second attempt, which was she refers to them as the Saracens, which was a generic term for Muslims a long time ago. And really, Muslim society, you know, 1,000 years ago, was one of the most free societies in the world, in which there was pluralism, there was tolerance. People of many belief systems are allowed to coexist and intermingle. And Muslim scholars are responsible for shaping some of the, you know, the world's largest intellectual achievements of that era.
Which, you know, the second discovery of freedom, the early Muslims that she describes, is maybe some new information to many of our conservative friends. There are many, much of everybody, because we think of this, you know, stereotype of Islam as this monolithic evil block of brown people or something somewhere else. Actually, she describes that the Muslim people then were much more sophisticated and gentlemanly than the people in Europe there.
It's true. And, you know, she explains their downfall as being a condition of, over time, they became less individualistic and more intolerant of individual difference. And that gradually led to the downfall of the Islamic Empire, which was tolerant and pluralistic at the time, eventually became, you know, more of what we see today, which is sort of, you know, inwardly looking, insular, you know, less respecting and tolerant of outside difference. But historically, that wasn't the case. That was, you know, it really was at the time a large-scale attempt at achieving human freedom.
And then the third of the three discoveries of freedom, as I take, was the American experiment.
That's exactly right. The United States. And, I mean, more than just the United States, the whole process of, you know, breaking away from, you know, being a colonial empire and establishing, you know, an autonomous, well, you know, relatively autonomous a zone of human freedom. And again, she doesn't indicate that any of these attempts were perfect, but just that the more freedom there was, the more people prospered, and the more technology advanced, the more knowledge advanced, and we see that again and again throughout history. The more freedom there is, the better condition of humankind becomes.
And what you mentioned there might be a challenging idea to many listeners there, that more freedom equals better life for, and you're talking about, I mean, the average person as well, correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah, it would think, well, no, if you give people, you know, open laissez-faire type stuff, it's going to be the rich and powerful. They're going to have advantage. They're going to get rich. And they're going to exploit the poor people, and you're going to have people dying in the streets and people fending for this bloody anarchy. How would you respond to that concern?
Well, that's essentially the view that Rose Wilder Lane had early on. She thought that you know, there needed to be, you know, a plan to the economy, that some central authority needed to tell people what to do and what types of investments to make, how to run their businesses, in order for there to be sort of a rational order to the economy. But she found from practical experience that that's just not the case. Centralized authorities don't have any particular insight into, you know, the wide variety of needs that exist throughout a population. There are so many diverse types of needs, wants, and types of individual conditions throughout society that any centralized authority can't know how to plan an economy. They can try, but they will always fail. So the more you allow people to make decisions on their own, free decisions, they'll be able to respond to the unique conditions, the unique wants and needs that exist immediately around them, and that widespread, diverse responding to unique circumstance and individual, you know, frames of reference is what allows, you know, economies to grow.
And having leaders that you can trust, and those leaders trusting their citizenry to make their own decisions as long as there's not violence going on or so forth. You know, have the rule of law where, you know, some authority is there to, you know, if somebody's killing somebody or stealing from somebody, fraudulent type things or gross child neglect and things like that, that somebody's there to take care of those things to be authorized to do that. But, you know, I guess what you're talking about earlier about, you know, the tendency of human history to go towards authority, that they've been on the verge of starvation, she mentions, because of this limiting factor. They're not able to grow their own food and live as they please. But one thing that also would seem counterproductive to an empire that would seem to want to collect up as much booty as they could is that these authoritarian regimes seem to go to war. Always warring with each other and, you know, basically killing their people and, you know, ruining the means of production, including food production. What do you have to say about war?
Well, one reason why war is so common among you know, economies that are centrally planned, among, you know, countries that have strong totalitarian leaders that try to control their people, they go to war because they try to plan their own societies and they fail. Their societies fail to produce what they want them to produce, so they plunder other countries in order to get what they have.
Hmm. Some more cynical listeners might say that starts to sound like the United States these days. And, you know, like you were saying about the Muslim world and so forth, that strayed from trusting different people and, you know, say diversity or what have you there. But, you know, we've a lot of people waking up to the fact that we've strayed from our original founding. And I mean, it wasn't perfect. You know, there's the slavery was our, you know, national sin. It's terrible to, you know, have that sort of thing. But, you know, there's other things. We mistreated the Indians, the Native American people, and so forth. But the premise of trying to spread freedom, at least to some people, even if it was first, you know, white male landowners, and then go from there, and women and people of color and beyond that sort of thing. You know, maybe it's authority, you know, whether it's Alexander Hamilton or others that were debating for to have a more central authority. And you know, the Civil War where Lincoln consolidated power. And then some say about this time of the Spanish-American War, we started to venture into this empire. How have you seen that we've strayed from that discovery of freedom that we had in the late 18th century to today?
Well, so we've definitely retreated from freedom on many fronts. You know, we have you know, an increasing percentage of the economy going to fund you know, big government programs, to fund you know, subsidies to big business, corporate welfare.
We were talking about that in the first half of the hour here locally. Yeah.
Oh yeah, very good. Yeah, I mean, and not just financial. There are many ways in which the government controls what we do, controls how we do it. We're still, to a large degree, we're a free society. But to every extent that the government regulates our lives and tells us how we can relate to each other, how we can do business with each other, it makes it that much more difficult for us to respond to, as I mentioned before, the changing sets of circumstances, individual needs and wants that exist around us. It's a barrier to that kind of innovation, and therefore to widespread prosperity.
Mm.
We're prosperous to the extent that we're free, but we would be a lot more prosperous, and we would have a lot greater freedom and prosperity for, you know, every class of society. If we were even more free than we are now.
Yeah. Some would say that we need, you know, government that's big enough to stand up to special interests, corporate interests that would want to, you know, push their authority on society. But I guess my question to that, and I'll have you respond to this, what about when the very corporations and special interests that you want the government to protect you from essentially own the government? What happens then?
Is it- There's a great P.J. O'Rourke quote, the libertarian humorist, who basically said, the first thing that happens when government controls buying and selling is that government is bought and sold, or politicians are bought and sold.
Ain't that the truth?
And I mean that it's what we call in I guess the public policy world, the public choice outlook. Public choice economics tells us that there's a set of perverse incentives within the public sphere that private interests, special interests, always tend to capture the regulatory process for their own favor. So if we have the government trying to regulate business, in a way that we think might be good for consumers, special interests tend to capture that process. They tend to direct, public funds and public regulation.
Write the rules.
Yeah, and write the rules, restrict their competitors, and entrench themselves as being, successful. But what we have in America today is largely a variant of corporatism, where essentially the government is picking winners and losers, and ordaining, victory in the economy to very specialized interests who have the financial power to buy the regulatory process.
Yeah.
And so when we have a government that can engage in that process, we will almost certainly have special interests who will capture it and direct it in their favor. I don't think there's any real way around that with the nature of the incentive structure in the public sphere.
Yeah. Gotcha.
The best thing to do is to take the government out in that process.
Yeah, or at least have a thin enough government as people agree to and consent to voluntarily to take care of law and order, legitimate law and order, not go after nonviolent offenders of things morality we don't think we like, killing and stealing and fraud and contractual breaking and things like that, and all that's part of the political sphere to determine that. But been talking about author Rose Wilder Lane's book, The Discovery of Freedom: Man's Struggle Against Authority, with Eric Dixon. He's the editor of the Show Me Institute. Yes, that Show Me Institute. And actually, you guys, I guess through a Sunshine request, got a copy of a video of a SWAT raid that occurred here in Columbia back in 2008. Is that correct?
Our policy analyst Audrey Spaulding and research assistant John Payne filed a Sunshine request with the state for a wide range of surveillance of SWAT team footage.
Mm-hmm.
They generally record every raid that they make.
Yeah.
And so we released some of them to his friends in other organizations here in Missouri. We didn't release them ourselves on our own website, and I don't know offhand the address of the website where they're located.
It's at keepcolumbiafree.com, I believe it is. Local group that's got a hold of that. There's another group that name escapes me here. But, it's I think last I heard there were like 3,000 views on YouTube. We had another video released late last year or mid part of last year, whenever it was. I don't know. Maybe Columbia's being known for the SWAT raid capital of the area, even though this happens, 100, 150 times a day is a rally.
Well, it happens all over the United States.
Yeah, all the time. And, that's not freedom. Somebody sitting at home with a joint, or they think there's a joint or something, and this overwhelming violence by your government going in and getting his people is that's not a discovery of freedom.
These raids happen on very flimsy pretexts. Without a lot of evidence collected beforehand. Somebody accuses somebody else of possibly having drugs, and they go in and raid. People get shot. Pets get shot. Yeah. Children are put in danger.
Yeah. The authoritarianism is ratcheted. It doesn't go backwards when there's a stain on the face, unless people really stand up to that. But well, Erica, thanks so much for your time, and take care over there in St. Louis. Yeah.
And if any of your listeners are interested, they might like to know that there's a Show Me Institute forum coming up on Monday, February 7th there in Columbia at the University of Missouri at noon on Monday, February 7th. We'll be about the 2010 midterm elections.
Okay, great. Well, appreciate your time this evening. We'll catch you next time, man.
Thank you very much, Steve.
All right. This has been the Mid-Missouri Freedom Forum, covering the diverse aspects of human freedom, if you will.